Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. This week we are going to look at another director. That's right, it's director spotlight time, and this time we are looking at Guy Ritchie. That's right, the director of Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, Sherlock Holmes, the new King Arthur movie, and so much more. It's going to be a lot of, you know, fun, and if anyone makes a Mr. Madonna joke, I think legally we're not allowed to talk about that. So it should be a lot of fun to do. And Mr. Mike Gordon is on vacation this week. He's up in the wilds of Alaska. I think he said something about calling himself Howdy Nanook from now on. So I think that should be his new nickname. So instead, we are here with Lacey is back on the show.
Hello, hello.
Greetings and welcome back.
Thank you, thank you. Very exciting.
What kind of adventures have you been on since last time on the show?
Oh, had a few productions that I've been running around on. We had the new Queer Eye show filming at my complex, so that was fun last week. And some, you know, commercials here and there. So we've been running around in circles like chickens with our heads cut off, but it's been fun.
Are they actually filming it in your apartment complex?
Yeah, one of our residents was a participant. It's not a contest, but yeah, he was on their list. So they did their thing, you know, what they do.
Oh, that's awesome.
So yeah, they're doing a reboot for Netflix.
Yeah, I had heard about that. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, that's very cool that you were right in your next apartment, basically down the hall, mm-hmm, across the way. It's okay. You know, it's cool. Mm-hmm. But it's awesome to have you back on the show. And, you know, this is actually, I think, out of the 25 cents you spent to be on the show, this is your last, you know, this is your last one, official one, as that way. But I'm sure we're going to have you on many, many more times beyond this.
Hooray.
I think you got hooked with the podcast bug now.
I did. I'm so, I really am. I keep trying to tell Alex that we need to get a quirky movie segment going.
I would love it if you guys did. You guys had some great chemistry between the two of you, and I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys come up with. So with that being said, the show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESOAmazon.com store, where you can find all kinds of cool stuff, including some Guy Ritchie movies. I thought it'd be kind of cool of a tie-in that way. So if you go to the ESO podcast website, ESOpodcast.com, you go and click on the Amazon store link right on the top. And you know what? You could shop to your heart's delight. And if you don't feel like doing that, we make it even easier to go shopping at Amazon.com now. All you have to do is type in ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon. Take you right to Amazon.com. And anything you buy on that shop and, you know, off that link, you can, you know, help support the station, you know, help Lacey make her 25 cents back, help, you know, Mike Gordon make a new igloo up in Alaska. There's so much you can do by helping the station out, you know, hell, give us new servers. That would be a nice thing. So you never know, with your support, it keeps the station running and we do appreciate it. And speaking of appreciating you, please write us ESOpodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. If you like what you say, we will put you up on the air. And, you know, you never know. Might put you in the geek seat or something. And speaking of putting somebody up on the air, we have a new friend joining us this week. Let's welcome to the show Heather Allen, live from California. Hi, Heather.
Hi. Thrilled to be here.
Welcome to the station. You want to tell us about this really cool project you've got going on?
Yes, yes. I am a reality television casting director, and I'm working on this really cool project right now where we are looking for couples in online relationships. You know, people who, because of the wonderful world of the internet, who, you know, somebody could live in New York and another person could live in Alaska, and they can meet on a website and they have a relationship. And what we want to do is find those people who are serious about it and, you know, tell us their stories, and, you know, maybe we can help them meet. We want to get them together and sort of see what happens.
Oh, that sounds awesome. And are you basing it off of people who've already done this and, you know, such, or has it just the popularity of online dating gotten so popular that, you know, people are just, you know, coming out of the woodwork?
You know, I'm not sure what the genesis of it is, but I do know that it is sort of, it's an established fact that most people meet online. And what's very interesting is, you know, it's, and it's more than just online dating. It's, you know, yes, I do, you know, check out all the online dating sites too, but I mean, I actually know of a couple who met in a fan fiction writers group, and they've been together for 3 years, even though they live half a world away. And so these stories exist, and we thought it was such an exciting place to, you know, spend our time and, you know, bring people together and see what, you know, see what happens. It's really exciting.
Oh, that's awesome. And folks, this is the real deal. This is not a fly-by-night company. You guys have done other reality shows, haven't you?
Oh, yes. We are the producers of Married at First Sight, all of the Little Women's, you know, Little Women Atlanta. That we are the producers of that, another show called A 7-Year Switch. So they do have a, there was a show called Geeks Who Drink, which I really wish I'd been on.
Me too. Me too.
And it's for a major cable network, which of course I'm not allowed to say which one it is, but everyone's heard of it.
Okay. So you can't even tell us it rhymes with Hetflix or something like that, or
I wish I could, but then, you know, then I'll get fired.
Okay. Yeah. We definitely don't want that, because we want you coming on our show and tell us all about all these new projects you got going on. That is awesome. So how can people, you know, if they know somebody or if they are involved with something like this, how can they contact you?
Absolutely. There's a few different ways. We have like a direct application, which is we use a program that allows us to put the application online. So like the email address is onlinelovers.castingcrane.com. You can also reach out to me, Heather Allen. My email is allencasting, allyncasting@gmail.com. And I'm also going to put some stuff up on Twitter and on Facebook on your pages so that you all have that there. But that's the best way to get in touch with us. Again, it's onlinelovers.castingcrane.com. And you can reach out to me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I'm everywhere looking for people.
And actually, this will also be in our show notes that, you know, go along with our podcast so people can find it there. But it's great for you to put it up on the different ESO pages. That's awesome. I appreciate it.
Of course, of course.
Here's the important question, though. Also, is there a deadline?
Well, we always say immediately, because it is sort of, you know, the nature of the beast is we have to start presenting things. But I'm going to be on this project for about another 5 weeks. So if people can really get stuff into us within the next 2 or 3 weeks, I have a big deadline on the 28th of July. So I'd love to have everything in maybe around the 21st.
Awesome.
You know.
What is the what is the process for this? You know, I'm a newbie to this type of stuff. You know, I tried once applying for The Amazing Race, and, you know, I had to send a 3-minute video with the person I was going to run the race with, you know, describing why we'd be great contestants. What does a person have to do?
Generally, you know, there's sort of two different ways these shows get cast. You know, something like Amazing Race, you know, everyone submits, but also it's my job to find people. But basically what happens is whether I find you or you apply to the show and I find you in my inbox, I give you a phone call and we chat and we, you know, I get a sense of, you know, your story and, you know, how you speak, because, you know, one of the important things about reality television is you have to find people who are able to convey their own stories. We're all about stories. So, and then if we feel like it's a good fit, then, we do a Skype interview. It's pretty simple. And then that gets edited down to a little pitch reel, which is what we send to the network. And they're the ones who tell us who they want. But it's sort of, you know, this sort of ongoing process, you know, of choosing the right people and then ultimately sending the right people to the network.
Gotcha. No, that totally makes sense. It's probably a grueling process in some ways for the casting directors to have to go through, you know, all these tapes and all these applications and such to find the right people.
It is, although interestingly enough, I mean, yes, there's the, you know, I've done shows where there's like such a huge, you know, amount of people in the inbox. One of the shows I do pretty regularly is a show called Are You the One on MTV, which, so, you know, we get a lot of applications for that. But also sometimes the people who necessarily just apply aren't necessarily the people you're looking for. So, you know, I have an army of people I work with, and we spend all our time on social media finding people. That's actually the grueling part. We call it outreach. And it's where we go and we you know, we have in our head, it's like, we need someone, you know, a little like this or, a little, you know, we don't really have cast in our head, but we're just sort of like, we're missing something. And so we just go far and wide, which is, you know, how I found you. It's this, that's the weird nature of this business, is this thing we do called outreach, which is we leave no stone unturned to find the right person for the show.
Oh, sure. That totally makes sense. And it's a neat process. It's, you know, something that probably would blow most of our minds, all the stuff you guys have to go through to find the right people.
It is. It's very interesting. It has its challenges, but it's really fun. I mean, it's, you know, basically it's very strange to be interviewed because I'm usually the person doing all the interviewing, but you know, I talk to people all day. People are fascinating.
Well, and you definitely are a people person, so it could definitely come across that way.
This is true. And I love what I do. And it's, you know, and I've done a vast array of shows. So I get to speak to all kinds of different people. And what I love about this particular project is that I am a total geek myself, played, you know, Dungeons and Dragons like the old school way with the 12-sided die. I've spent all day watching Game of Thrones, and I do find this space is where a lot of people are comfortable online. And that's why I was so thrilled to connect with you guys, because it's sort of like, this is, you know, the space where there are really interesting people who have stuff to say, and that's how they meet. I think it's great.
That's awesome. I think it's a neat experience because truthfully, you know, it's Hollywood at its best, and reality TV is all over the place now from, you know, things that I've done. And like I said, you know, with The Amazing Race all the way up to, you know, Real Housewives, they have cooking shows, they have, and it's geekdom at its best is coming across.
I agree. I think it's really, I think like the sort of, you know, we've come out of the locker, as it were, mm-hmm. after being, and I think it's given us a platform where we can, you know, say like, you know, we're actually cooler than you are, to be honest.
Well, there you go. I think that's awesome that, you know, you have that all going on. And one more time, how can people find you?
Absolutely. If you want to find, if you have questions, you can email me at allyncasting@gmail.com. You can apply directly to the show at onlinelovers.castingcrane.com. Those are the two best ways to get in touch with us. I mean, I'm always checking my email. You send me, give me your phone number, and I will answer any questions you have.
That sounds awesome. Nope, that sounds perfect. I really appreciate you coming on the show. And if you want, you know, we might have you on for your next project, and where we could see later on how the process of this project is going too.
I would love to be back on and talk about our next project. And I'm thank you very much for having me. I think this is super cool.
Yeah, I think right now you've avoided the geeksy for this episode, but I think maybe next time you might not be so lucky.
Okay. I'm willing to, I'll take the challenge.
Oh, it's recorded. We have that on tape now. So beware.
I know. You can't put a dare near me without me jumping for it. It's just the way I am.
A true geek. I love it.
Awesome.
Thank you, Heather. And we are looking forward to hearing how this project goes.
Thank you very much. And I appreciate all your help. And again, just, you know, check the show notes. I'll have a flyer up, alancasting@gmail.com, if anyone has any questions.
Perfect. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with the Geek Seat.
This is Ashley Pauls with this week's What to Watch. The past month has been a bit slower at the box office than sometimes we see during the summertime, since Wonder Woman kicked off the month of June with a bang. But things are going to start picking up soon with this weekend's Spider-Man Homecoming. I'm super excited to see this movie get great reviews, even though initially I wasn't super pumped about another Spider-Man reboot. That's right, this is about the third Spider-Man reboot we've had in recent history, and I wasn't sure that we really needed another Spider-Man so soon. However, I loved Spider-Man's cameo in the recent Captain America Civil War, and he was actually one of the highlights of that movie for me. While I've enjoyed some of the past Spider-Man movies, I thought that Tom Holland's Spider-Man in Civil War did a really great job of capturing kind of the awkward, excitable, real teenage feel of the character. So I'm definitely excited to see him get his own film and also to see the studio cooperating with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, especially since it means that Robert Downey Jr. is going to cameo in this film. It may actually be a little more extended than a quick cameo. Like I said, this one's getting really good reviews so far. So even though we've seen quite a few Spider-Man reboots, it looks like this one's going to be a lot of fun. Can't wait to see this one in theaters. Although Spider-Man Homecoming is undoubtedly going to be dominating the box office this weekend, there's a couple other movies coming out. Actually, two movies about ghosts, funnily enough, and neither one's really a horror thriller type movie. We do have the drama called A Ghost Story, which is about a ghost who visits his wife after his passing. And this one's actually a little bit more of a philosophical movie with an exploration of themes like love and loss. Then we also have the movie City of Ghosts, which is a documentary about citizen journalists exposing human rights violations in Syria. On DVD this week, we don't have a whole lot, but we do have The Zookeeper's Wife, which is a historical drama about zookeepers protecting people and animals from the Nazi advance during the World War II era. Well, that's it for this week. Be sure to tune in next week. I'm excited to talk about the next chapter in the War for the Planet of the Apes franchise.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Now we are here with author Matthew W. Quinn. Welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for letting me come on.
Absolutely. Welcome to the station. This is, you're on the ESO network, or at least you are part of the network with you're on. Now, are you always like a frequent person, like a co-host on Myopia?
I'm not a co-host, but I am a fairly regular contributor to Myopia. Yes, sir.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we love that show as being part of the network, and you guys are doing a great job over there. But in addition to talking about that, we need to talk about your fiction that you've recently released.
Oh, yes, definitely. I have a new Lovecraftian horror novel out called The Thing in the Woods, which is available electronically on Amazon. It's a Kindle Unlimited, so it's available on Amazon exclusively. And you can also order the print book through Amazon, as well as other outlets like Barnes & Noble, for example.
Very awesome. Very awesome. Well, I know that previously we have talked about, and we even mentioned it on the show before, because for those people who may not know, we did actually try to record a Geek Seat once, but due to technical difficulties, it got lost. So, but we did make a shout out to a previous audio story that you had released, the Wendigo story.
Yeah. The one that had just come out when we recorded the first time was I Am the Wendigo, which was my first story I sold ever. It was to a magazine called Chimera Serials in 2006 that eventually went out of business. So I self-published it on Amazon for the Kindle. And then in January, recorded with Nick on Myopia an audio drama version with Lauren Collins as the voice talent.
Right.
And then after that, I released a novella through the Kindle Worlds program set in the Fallen Empire universe created by author Lindsay Baroker, who is a regular on the Sci-Fi and Fantasy Marketing podcast. And then just under a month ago, The Thing in the Woods came out. The Thing in the Woods is my first original novel. It's published by Digital Fiction Publishing.
Wow. So I was going to say, you've been quite prolific this year already. Mm-hmm. Well, the short story, the audio, I remember at the time and mentioning to you that it was very, very, I don't really usually read a lot of horror, but that book really, I mean, the story was really chilling. I listened to the audio version of it and it was read really well, but just the way you set that up was pretty chilling of a story. So I can only imagine that. Is that where you said that you just wrote a Kindle Worlds thing, but do you see yourself more as a horror writer, or just do you like to try different things?
Well, the ideas that come out of my head are fairly varied in terms of where they go. Like The Thing in the Woods is a horror novel. I have a sequel I'm kind of fiddling with now that I'm a quarter to a third written called The Atlanta Incursion that gets more into kind of the UFO lore. So Thing in the Woods starts as a straight horror novel and it gets more science fiction as the series goes along. But I remember reading somewhere, listening to a podcast, that horror is an aesthetic. Like The Predator is a science fiction film that's horror. Hellraiser is a fantasy film that's horror. And so on and so forth. The argument is that horror is not really a genre.
Oh, interesting. That's an interesting way to look at it. Because, yeah, there are a lot of, you know, like horror does mix in with a lot of different genres. You're right.
Yeah, and I'm thinking with another Kindle World story that is like in the Kindle World's novella, 10 David's Two Goliaths. Spoiler alert, a Imperial ship is shot down by rebels and the sequel story, more of a companion piece called Fallen Titan, is the survivors of the Imperial ship on the surface of a planet getting hunted by an alien predator. So that's sci-fi, it's horror. But it's also based on the Battle of Ramry Island in World War II, where a bunch of crocodiles attacked Imperial Japanese soldiers. And if they made a movie about that, that would be a war movie. But you also make it a horror movie too, because it's been kind of a monster thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But not everything I write is horror-ish. I mean, some is just straight sci-fi, some is straight fantasy. I have one thing I'm trying to sell called Little People, Big Guns that I'd probably put out under a pseudonym for branding reasons. That's maybe horror, maybe bizarro, maybe it's kind of a goofy farce.
Okay. Getting to The Thing in the Woods, did you mention that it's going to be part of a series?
Well, yeah, I guess it depends ultimately on how well this sells. But the idea is that the protagonist of Thing in the Woods is a high school senior going to college, same with his love interest. And the second one takes place would be their freshman year. Oh, dear, it's spoilers, isn't it? In college.
Gotcha.
At different schools when weird stuff starts happening again. And the world gets a bit bigger.
Gotcha. Well, the description on the Amazon page is pretty good. It's not spoilers, but yeah, it does give you a sense of what it is. It's got a nice write up blurb by a friend of the station, James R. Tuck, which is awesome. And what else do you want people to know about, like, to get this book? Like, if they like X, Y, and Z, what will they turn to for this?
Well, I'm looking at the also bots. And there's a whole lot of monster stories in the Ocelot section. It's also Lovecraftian. So it's like, you know, so if people like the works of H.P. Lovecraft or the people who wrote after him, they mm-hmm. would like that as well. And there's also a series called Delta Green that's sort of like, you know, Men in Black, Special Forces types fighting against aliens or other extra-dimensional things. And Charles Stross has the Atrocity Archives. And ultimately where the series is going is kind of like that. But The Thing in the Woods by itself, it stands alone, is a kind of a Lovecraftian horror novel, almost a teen novel. It's also not very long. It's about 250 pages, which is a lot of novels used to be a lot shorter, and they start getting more larger ones in recent years. So if they want something that's a reasonably quick read, like a weekend instead of a week, it would work for them as well.
Very nice. Very nice. Yeah, we had an author and a podcaster. One of our new podcasting partners was on a couple weeks ago talking about how they, with Lovecraft, what they really like to do is they, and this seems to be a trend of a lot of people who are into Lovecraft, they like to read the stuff that inspired Lovecraft, then read Lovecraft, and then read a lot of things that are inspired by Lovecraft, which obviously this would fit into. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like it's in a grand tradition.
Oh, thank you.
Well, very cool. Well, obviously you can get that available on Kindle and Amazon. So we'll have links for it on our show notes. But in the meantime, I think Mike, I think you've got this is his second time really in the geek seat, but the geek seat doesn't forgive. So we'll be kind of curious to see how he's treated in this time.
I think it might be a little rougher this time. You know, as I remember, the geek seat is not very forgiving.
Right. So. It doesn't like do-overs.
Oh, no, 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 no. No do-overs. This is going to be a continuation.
Gotcha. Oh, good.
You know, we should have actually made new questions for it. But, you know, see if he remembers the last time.
Okay.
All right, Matt, you ready for your first question in the geek seat?
Sure, go ahead.
What was your favorite geek out moment?
Okay, well, in the original Avengers at the end, when the Hulk just whoops up on Loki and leaves him embedded in the floor of Tony Stark's penthouse, that was pretty fun. I was seeing the movie in theaters, and the audience straight up applauded.
No, of course, that, punny god.
What he got.
That was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I also liked Benedict Cumberbatch when he was Smaug in The Hobbit, because I can mimic his voice really rather well.
Let's hear it.
There you are, thief in the shadows.
Oh, that was good. Goosebumps there.
Hey,
very cool.
Thank you.
Yep. What was your most disappointing geek out moment?
Well, I'm in Star Trek Into Darkness and Star Trek Beyond. I kind of didn't like the whole rogue soldier who can't adapt to peace decides to start a war thing. I mean, soldiers generally hate war. They have more reason than anyone else. And plus in Star Trek Beyond, we're getting a little spoilery here, the big reveal that Krall, the lizard man dude, was a renegade Starfleet Marine who loved war too much, was just recycling Into Darkness. Well, the previews I saw it, it has his line, "This is where the frontier pushes back." I thought maybe he might have been some alien warlord who felt threatened by the expansion of the Federation. And like what came to my mind was the Indian Wars, because like during the Civil War, when all the men and soul armies were busy elsewhere, the Comanche actually pushed the Texas border back instead of just getting run over like most of the other Indian tribes did. So that could have been a very interesting take on Krall. And instead it was just, another soldier who loves war, which most soldiers don't.
Interesting. I could see that. What geeks you out the most, sir?
Okay, well, space technology, kind of like that. Like, I'm fond of space elevators. And have you heard of Project Orion?
I have, but let's tell it to the people out there.
Okay, it's a spacecraft propelled by nuclear explosions. It's not nearly as insane as it sounds, but you have your spaceship, a gigantic steel pusher plate, and you shove a nuclear bomb out the back and set it off, and it kind of pushes you along.
Yeah.
They was really big. They designed that in the 50s, never really did much with it beyond testing out how far a nuclear explosion could throw something. But you could get, theoretically, at Alpha Centauri in about 100 years using Project Orion. And there's a novel called Footfall by Niven and Purnell, where they have an alien race, a generation ship, and their smaller craft use like the more controlled version of nuclear pulse propulsion, where it's like shooting uranium pellets with lasers, the way a car engine would be like fueled by using spark plugs to ignite gasoline.
Sure.
And the humans build the Archangel Michael, the angel that threw Satan down from heaven, a Orion type battleship using World War II battleship guns and space shuttles carrying nuclear missiles.
Wow.
Glorious.
Wow. That I have not heard. What turns your geek off?
Politics, like in fiction. I mean, you can have fiction reflecting certain values and worldview. And we can, like Tolkien has Catholicism, Lewis has, you know, kind of Christianity in general. But you can get really preachy and annoying. Like, have you seen the movie Dragonblade?
Yes.
Yeah, I just got so tired of Dragonblade about halfway through, I just turned it off.
Oh, wow.
Like, it is just really kind of preachy and almost propagandistic.
Right.
Then you have people who just rant against works or authors on, like, political or moral grounds. Like, there are some people who, like, some people think J.K. Rowling is some kind of evil Calvinist because they claim the sorting system of, you know, the Hogwarts houses is predestinationist.
Oh, of course. I've heard that,
or
too.
The people who claim Tolkien was, like, a racist or an authoritarian.
Okay.
Like, you know, the idea of, like, authoritarian personalities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard that before.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's neat that you put it that way.
Yeah, so when people just start trashing, you know, a creator or a work, like calling them without really providing sufficient evidence for that, I mean, there is obviously stuff that is racist out there.
Oh, of course.
But when they're just, you know, when they're just attacking them without justification, that just aggravates me.
That's what you need to stay away from.
Yeah.
What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
Captain America or Iron Man would be cool. Hopefully they're not fighting each other. That might get real unpleasant. And same with Captain Kirk. And on the darker side, there's Loki.
True. Very true.
Yeah, Nick will hate me for bringing this up. There's a website I really like called TV Tropes. And TV Tropes has this whole exploration of the character of Loki that's really thoughtful.
Like, right.
He has his own trope page, I think.
Hmm. Interesting. Didn't even think about it that way. What fictional character would you like to meet the least?
Well, Gregor Clegane and Amory Lorch from Game of Thrones. Are you familiar with Game of Thrones?
Of course.
Yep.
We both are.
Oh, okay. Gregor is just a sadistic, glandular freak who's not very smart. He's a monster, not just in the sense that he's evil, but he's just freakish. And Amory Lorch, he's a skeezy coward who dies pathetically when the tables are turned. Like in the book, he's dragged naked, begging for his life, and thrown into a bear pit, when earlier he'd just been lording it over and tyrannizing and murdering people gleefully. And Gregor, at least, is a fierce and scary warrior. Amory Lorch is just garbage.
Oh, sure. No, I know that exactly. That's awesome. I could definitely see wanting to stay away from that one. What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
Okay. All right. In the movie Finding Neverland, there's this quote from J.M. Barrie. Just a dog? Porthos dreams of being a bear, and you want to shatter those dreams by saying he's just a dog. What a horrible candle-snuffing word. That's like saying he can't climb that mountain, he's just a man. Or that's not a diamond, it's just a rock. Just. It's just about the evils of destroying people's dreams.
Oh, sure. No, I remember that completely. That's actually one of my favorite movies. That's impressive. What is your ideal geek occupation?
Sci-fi, fantasy, and horror writer, because that's ideally what I'd like to do full time.
Sure. No, that's awesome. Well, you're getting your feet into it, and, you know, if it takes off, that'd be great if it could for you.
Yeah, I guess it depends on the writer and how successful it is. It's something I've learned is you're probably not going to make a full-time income with just one book.
It's lucky to be said.
You got to have more than one.
No, go ahead.
You got to have just more than one. They kind of build on each other, especially if you have a series, because if people want to read the second one, they got to read the first, and then, you know, the third, and the first and second, so on and so forth.
Totally understand that. Because, you know, you could say the same thing about podcasting. That's why we have so many of them on the network.
And diversification.
Exactly. What geek occupation would you not like to do?
I'm not really a math and numbers person, so I probably would not be very good at a lot of STEM jobs.
Oh, sure. Totally understand that. Definitely understand that. Are you ready for your final question, Matt?
Yeah.
Here we go. What is your ultimate geek fantasy?
Okay, well, let's see. For my life, making J.K. Rowling, or at least Stephen King, Dean Koontz level money so I can do it full time with financial security. And if I make J.K. Rowling type money, I could, you know, maybe invest it in producing awesome movies. Because there's so many original ideas out there, mine or other people, but said Hollywood keeps remaking them, keeps making remakes that aren't very good.
Mm-hmm. Yep, totally understand that.
And for the wider world, a space elevator, that would be cool. Like, it not only allows for launch, you know, getting things into orbit much more easily and putting it in a rocket and shooting it out of the gravity well, you also could run solar panels up the length of it, and you could have power for the whole chunks of the planet from that. Like, there's a book, I think, by William Forsten called Pillar to the Sky, where I came up with a whole solar panel concept I'd never thought of before.
Oh, sure. No, I totally could see that. Well, that is awesome. Well, Matt, congratulations, sir. You've made it through the geek seat this time. Twice.
Again.
Huzzah.
And there was much rejoicing.
Mr. Mike Gordon, tell the young man what he's won.
You have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth $9.06.
Thank you.
Wow. Well, we're going down in the world, as we said,
it's station credits, so it devalues if you get closer to Earth. And in the meantime, people need to check out your book. They could check out The Thing in the Woods at Kindle, Amazon. We will have a link to it on our show notes. Where can they go to find out more about what you're up to, what you're doing?
Okay, well, I have my Twitter feed at Matthew W. Quinn. I have my blog, www.accordingtoquinn.com. That's The World According to Quinn. And I have a newsletter that a lot of the writer people, you know, how to make a career of writing books I've been reading, just having a newsletter. The newsletter sign-up link is on the blog. So, yeah, just visit Twitter, at Matthew W. Quinn, or my blog, The World According to Quinn, www.accordingtoquinn.com.
Awesome. And we will have links to all that in our show notes. Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you for your patience for doing this again. I know that it was kind of a pain, but I think it worked out because your book is out, so we can help promote that. And yeah, definitely say hi to all the folks at Myopia for us.
I'll do that. Thank you.
Let's take a quick break and we'll be back in a moment.
Welcome to Myopia Defend Your Childhood, the podcast where every week we put a little bit of your past on trial. Wait, you don't know who we are? Well, fine. First, we take a movie that you like. You know the ones. The ones the buses always had on field trips.
We got a real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam.
The afternoon animated show tie-in.
Or rewrite history.
Or the ones your parents didn't want you to see, but you watched at a sleepover. So that's the game. The movies are 10 years old and the defendant hasn't seen them in 5. Then
we're here to talk about The Sandlot. When I was a kid, I wasn't allowed to play with the other children, so this is how I learned human interaction.
Ask them what they think.
Obviously, I remembered earwigs, because as soon as my parents found out that I was deathly afraid of parasites, they were like, let's show her Wrath of Khan.
So, in the end, does your past hold up? Can you defend your childhood? Tune in every Thursday to find out.
Golden brown, fine temptress, through the ages she's heading west. From far away, stays for a day, never a frown with golden brown.
Welcome back. It's now time for the director's spotlight. Sometimes you have a director that is unique, has a vision, and has his point of view that you can always tell this is a blank movie, or this is a, you know, you has a feel to it. And the director we're looking at this time, Guy Ritchie, truly has a feel and a look and a type to his movies. A lot of times they're very almost hyper realistic and fighting and violence, or even humor. And it's pretty darn awesome. You could definitely see a Guy Ritchie movie and know right away it has that kind of look and feel to it. And we are going to be touching on all his different movies. And Lacey and I are, of course, going to be diving into it. But we're joined by our friend Nick Frazier. Welcome, Nick.
Thank you very much.
This is your second time up on the station. Welcome back. You decided to join us again.
I figured, why not? Having seen most of Guy Ritchie's movies.
Are you a fan? Like, have you from right from the start? Or what was your introduction to him?
My introduction was Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. I'm pretty sure I saw that in the theater. I know I saw Snatch in the theaters. I was just drawn in quite quickly by his... I would say if there's any two things that you could put in a Guy Ritchie movie would be smart-ass dialogue and frame rate changes. Those two seem to be constant in all his films.
Oh, sure. That totally makes sense. And it is, you know, that's, you know, different point, changing point of views, changing the frame rate, changing, you know, a lot of loud music in his movies. And, you know, it's always been that way. And it's kind of interesting. What about you, Lacey?
I think, I was introduced to him. I saw Lock, Stock in the theaters a million years ago. I think I've seen all but Swept Away and Revolver in the theater. I think I've seen all of them so far.
Oh, really? So, yeah. Wow.
And I will say that for me, it's more of a, like the interstitials. He likes to, not interstitials, but the intercutting. He likes to intercut two different things together that are, you know, similar and at the same time. So you see, you know, like, I guess in, what is it, Snatch, when you have the two guys running after, bad guy. And then you've got the two dogs running after the rabbit and he cut them together. So it was, you know,
mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it was just beautiful. Snatch, I had seen in the theater and it was my first introduction to him. I hadn't actually seen Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels until recently because people are going to hate me for this one, but every time I tried watching it beforehand, I would fall asleep. I don't know why. I tried watching it three different times and every time I tried watching it, out like a light. And I usually don't fall asleep during movies. And there was something about it. And just like probably about 6 months to a year ago, I watched it on, you know, it was on cable and I watched it from the very beginning and I loved it. Thought it was fantastic. And, you know, it was interesting because it kind of felt like the first movie and then Snatched was the sequel to it. In some ways, because it felt like it was almost based off the same type of characters. Not that, you know, you had the same actors, but, you know, and it almost felt like for a while you had Guy Ritchie having his little stable.
He got a lot of crap for the fact that Snatch was too much like Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. And I'm of the opinion that I don't think that's fair. They're variations on a theme. Yes, they are similar, but... they're dissimilar enough to be interesting for me.
Okay.
I agree. They're both heist movies, and that's great. But I think that he managed to take the circular nature of Lock, Stock, and, you know, I mean, he had such a small budget on that, and he had, you know, a very specific circle that he went in with all the characters. And I think he managed to use the same, not formula, but the same general script idea. And make it much more in depth with Snatch because you still have, you know, the circular interactions.
Mm-hmm.
No, you know,
totally makes sense.
There's a point in both movies where three or four agendas simply collide explosively.
Right. Yep.
And in both, in fact, involving cars, come to think of it. but he apparently had said in the making of with Snatch, he said there were still some ideas that I'd had for Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels that I wanted to continue on with. And apparently Snatch was going to be originally for shot. It was like 3 hours long. And he decided to take out the parts that you'll like this, Mike, that put him to sleep. And decided to make a much shorter movie. I think it works perfectly fine as it is. Snatch, of course, is much more interested in diamonds and boxing. Whereas Block, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, the gambling aspect is card playing and illegal marijuana and, you know, the usual mayhem you expect from a Guy Ritchie movie.
Oh, yeah. No, that totally makes sense.
And of course, Lock, Stock, and Snatch both had Vinnie Jones putting someone's head in a door of a car.
Yes, yes, yes.
So.
It was interesting, though, because the cast totally expanded with Snatch, and especially Brad Pitt. And
that was apparently Brad Pitt's suggestion. He wanted to work with Guy Ritchie. He loved Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he couldn't do any other kind of an accent, so they give him a character who's no one's supposed to understand anyway.
Mm-hmm. No, that's interesting because he is, you know, his character is hard to understand, if at all. And I love what they did on the video. They gave him, subtitles.
Yeah.
And
which is funny, though, because I actually understood all but the last sentence that he spoke in that film.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I sat with a friend of mine and she was like, what the? And I was like, hold on a second. So I actually wrote it down for her. And she read it. She was like, what doesn't make any sense? I said, it didn't have to make sense, but that's what he said.
I honestly think because the accent comes from Irish, that the pikey accent's a little easier for Americans to follow than for Brits, I think.
Mm. Right on.
That totally makes sense. And, you know, for me, you know, I didn't follow the whole thing with him being married to Madonna and the stuff that, you know, he was working on with her. I didn't actually follow anything that he did for his roles until he came up with Sherlock Holmes.
Huh. I would like to ask Lacey. Lacey, you said you didn't see Revolver in the theaters. Have you seen Revolver?
Yeah. I actually am about 3/4 of the way through it. That's the last film of his that I have.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I have to finish. It's
What's your opinion of it so far?
It's a problem because there's I don't know why he went with the animation. It drove me nuts. I've turned it off twice. So I finally started back. I was like, you know, I'm gonna give it one last try. And then I got called away to do something else. But I actually have about 40 minutes left of the movie and I made it past the animation. And I really love Ray Liotta. I love Jason Statham. I'm not super sure with what they did with his facial hair, or the rest of his hair for that matter. But I think that it's more a revenge story instead of it kind of goes back to his original kind of the London scene, but I can't really figure out where it's headed yet. And I'm, you know, like I said, I've got 45 minutes left, so I'm an hour in and I'm still waiting for the twist. There's always the twist, you know, so.
And you, Michael, have not seen it, correct?
I have not.
Okay. I just, without giving anything away for Lacey, I just want to say that I think the film is somewhat unfairly maligned. It's not a simple film. And Ritchie himself has said it's really intellectual and people got on his case for being intellectual. And apparently it also involves stuff involving the Kabbalah, which he was into then, which I don't quite get myself. But it's working on another metaphorical, philosophical level that his first two films aren't. And I think that cost him some audience there. It's actually a film that bears repeat viewing because you've got to go back and go, wait, what was going on there?
Well, I think that I was kind of looking to, because there's always kind of a hook with his film. So I think I missed the media buy-in on this. So I don't know what I was expecting. And I didn't actually go into it. I never saw a trailer or anything. I just thought, Guy Ritchie, okay, I'll do it. And so, I mean, I'm going to make it through it this time. I promise. It's just, I gotta hit those last 40 minutes.
It's interesting because his work, you know, I wouldn't call them low budget films. I wouldn't call them, you know, independent studio stuff, but it
was. Oh, he'd be happy. He'd be happy to have you call Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels a low budget film. He does.
Well, it can compared to, you know, what it was like his later stuff. Of course it was low budget.
Yeah.
But, you know, it still wasn't, you know, completely, you know, out of, you know, something that like a Kevin Smith doing Clerks or something like that. You know, it still had some of the backing. And it was interesting because a lot of times there's no medium or gray with Guy Ritchie movies. A lot of people, either you like them or you hate them. And there were a couple people on the ESO group who were like, I want to have, you know, I would love to come up and talk to him, but I hate his guts, you know, stuff like that, you know, and it's just like, it's just amazing.
Just as a quick aside about financing, you know how Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels got made, right?
I've heard the story. Go ahead and tell people at home.
Well, the story is that he shopped the film around to all sorts of British studios and nobody wanted it. And the person who finally picked it up was Trudy Styler and her production company. That's why her husband, Sting, has a small part in the movie. Because she decided she wanted to produce this, and it did her very well. Had a nice little role for her husband, too, in case he was between gigs. He does mention when making Snatch, since it was so successful, there was the possibility, he said, of going on and making some huge mayhem film in Hollywood. But he didn't want to do that for the second film. He wanted to stay in London and do something there. And I think in retrospect, at the time, like I said, as I said before, people were saying, oh, this is just more of the same. But I think in retrospect, it actually is, it's quite the good film, especially for its cast. And it's quite well remembered. I think sometimes people have trouble remembering whether they saw that funny Guy Ritchie line in Snatch or Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. So I think it did him well.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And I think Lock, Stock had a very specific kind of a London underground feel. And, you know, that was, let's see, that was 1998. And then like right around 2000, you know, right when he was putting Snatch on the screen, you know, you had all these other London gangster movies like Formula 51 and Gangster Number One and Love, Honor, and Obey that all came out kind of at the same time. And it was like all of a sudden Lock, Stock kind of opened this door and every film company was looking for a gritty London kind of flick. So,
and in turn, Snatch kind of opens that world up because we have Dennis Farina's cousin Avi, along with Benicio del Toro, playing Jewish.
Yes.
And you've got the Pikeys, so it's not, which apparently is a really rude word.
Oh yes.
Which is, you know, which opens it up from the very small. I mean, you know, the two of the principals live right next door to each other in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. It opens up that world quite a bit more, at the very least transatlantically.
Mm-hmm.
And before we go on to some of the later ones, one thing as a not so much necessarily a source, although I think of it as such, or certainly an influence that people don't mention enough with Guy Ritchie, I think, or at least what it reminds me of, is Damon Runyon, the American writer from the first half of the 20th century. Most people, if they've heard of Damon Runyon at all, know him as the source material for Guys and Dolls. He wrote stories about Nathan Detroit and Nameless Ned and all sorts of people in this sort of world, much like Guy Ritchie writes, but in New York, in the world of Broadway and gangsters and the floating crap games of New York City. And he also was known for this sort of snappy, he's known for this snappy, slang-ridden dialogue and humorous delivery, much like the sort of things you see in Snatch. In fact, he also uses rhyming slang, not unlike what you see with the Cockneys, although I don't think there's any direct connection. But no, I look at Guy Ritchie and think that's Damon Runyon. The people, because of when the films came out, would say, oh, Guy Ritchie, he's just a British Tarantino. I was like, no, he's not Tarantino on two counts. First of all, he's more genuinely humorous than Tarantino. And second, leading to the films that you're familiar with after this, Mike, the fact that he is willing to go work for the man in Hollywood in a way Tarantino simply isn't.
Well, exactly. He is in a lot of ways the opposite of Tarantino, because he went to go work and he took on, you know, established characters. He took on, you know, characters that basically, you know, Tarantino would not. He wanted his own thing going. But Guy Ritchie, you know, went and he took on, you know, very established characters like Sherlock Holmes. He took on the Man from U.N.C.L.E. He is going to be taking on Aladdin for Disney. He's doing the live version.
And King Arthur.
Yes.
Which given his history, the idea of him working for Disney is kind of insane, but okay.
I am shocked that he is doing work for Disney, but it's just weird things have happened.
I think Robert Downey Jr. had a quiet talk with someone in someone's ear over at Disney.
Oh yeah. I would not doubt it. But you know, as long as, you know, he's gonna be glad to do that, I think, you know, the movies you mentioned earlier, like Snatch and Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels and Revolver, were not mainstream enough that the everyday moviegoer knew him. He became a household name with Sherlock Holmes. And that's what brought him to the forefront, other than being Mr. Madonna, because that was all over the tabloids. And like I said, we're not talking about any of that because I don't want to waste my time on that.
The only thing that should be said was he was the best video director she ever had.
Oh, damn straight. But
and don't forget, we haven't talked about Rock and Roller yet. That was kind of his segue between, you know, the three Londoner films, you know, like that London Underground, and then kind of the flip to the more mainstream stuff.
True. Very true. Because it was, you know, it was him stepping out a bit from what he was used to.
Mm-hmm. It's a little connected with them. And he also had the good fortune of having two people on the rise, Gerard Butler and Idris Elba.
And Tandy Newton.
She'd already been around for a while, but I'll watch anything with Tandy Newton. and Tom Courtney was quite the established presence at that time. Oh, and Mark Strong. Let's not forget him either. It's
Tom Hardy.
Exactly. Yes, Tom Hardy. So it's quite a nice checkbox for all of them on the ascent, certainly.
It's just interesting because, you know, when he got there, he took it by the reins and he ran with it. And I thought he did a great version of Sherlock Holmes. But it was interesting because his version of Sherlock Holmes was coming out right about the same time that BBC was coming out with their Sherlock and for the first season of it. And to see the two of them compare, and there is no comparison. It's like two different beasts.
Sure. And then I think Elementary in the U.S.
came out the year later. Exactly.
Between Sherlock and Sherlock, Game of Thrones or Game of Shadows.
Yes.
Whoops. Sure. I would watch Sherlock Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones. I totally would.
I think a lot of people would too. I don't think you'd be alone in that. I mean, old fashioned when it comes to Sherlock Holmes. I still think Jeremy Brett was the best in period that they did in BBC. I also can't help wondering, as friends of mine discussed at the time, that the whole Sherlock thing was a little bit, I mean, it's a little bit the influence of the Nolan Batman.
Oh, very much so.
And also a little bit of the influence in turn with the retuning of James Bond, a little bit with the Bourne films as well. because all of a sudden it was, hey, let's redo in action these familiar heroes. And Guy Ritchie's an obvious choice you'd want to go for action, certainly.
Well, it's interesting,
and especially with the boxing element. I mean, his, you know, Sherlock's, or at least the RDJ version of Sherlock, has, you know, most of his physical action is boxing.
I had a discussion with a friend of mine who called me out saying, "Oh, are you did you object to that just because you don't think Sherlock Holmes is physical?" I said, "No, that's not my issue." I said, Watson in the stories makes it quite clear that Sherlock is quite capable of defending himself. Yes. There's a wonderful list in the first novella where he denotes all of Sherlock Holmes' strengths and weaknesses. And one of them is excellent single stick player, good boxer. So the idea that Sherlock Holmes would be a good boxer doesn't bother me. I'm not sure about him being a pit fighter, even though Holmes associated with all levels of society. But it was what it was.
Right on.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's the kind of interesting thing. Because if you think about it, with especially going back to his older films, a lot of the feeling you got from it, some of the fighting, some of the pretty hardcore, you know, violence in it, you could see rub off in the Christopher Nolan movies, the Batmans, the, you know, and such, or even with the Daniel Craig James Bonds.
Right. But Daniel Craig, before he was James Bond, he was the lead in Layer Cake, which was originally supposed to be directed by Guy Ritchie until he had to drop out for other reasons. And then he handed it off to his producing partner, Matthew Vaughn.
Exactly. Okay. Yes.
What?
I that explains why I often think of Layer Cake as a Guy Ritchie movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Well, Layer Cake is what got, you know, Daniel Craig Bond.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it definitely has the same feel as a Guy Ritchie. But Vaughn's movies also, if you look at Kingsman.
Right.
Feels very much like a Guy Ritchie movie.
Yeah. He learned a lot from Guy.
Yeah, but he also kind of took some, I mean, Matthew Vaughn, he did Layer Cake, and then he kind of went off into the fantasy realm a little bit, and then a romance, and then he kind of came back to Layer Cake before he ended. I mean, before he came back to Kingsman. What am I trying to say? Kingsman, yeah.
Kingsman.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's interesting that, you know, you have a lot of now directors out there that are emulating him, and that's of a sign of a true teacher, and which is pretty darn awesome.
Oh, absolutely.
And so, you know, I think the Sherlock Holmes movies work really well. And I think if you're going for the true mystery and such, you're not going to get these in this movie. Watch Sherlock. If you want a good action movie, a good adventure movie, watch Sherlock Holmes. Both of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're good adaptations, but I don't know how true to the character you're going to get. But that's not what you're going for. And that also goes into Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Right. But I mean, with Man from U.N.C.L.E., there were how many episodes to pull from as far as, you know, historical, you know, taking a look and seeing how he wanted, whether he wanted to stick with the way things were done or if he wanted to update it a little bit. I think I like the way they stuck with the time period and everything else. I don't think it would have worked as an update.
No, not at all. I think it worked great as a Cold War movie.
I agree.
And it almost felt, because we did an episode way back in, you know, the wilds of 2015 on Man from U.N.C.L.E., and we actually reviewed it, and most of us said this felt like it was a prequel to the TV show. And this is because they never gave an origin of, you know, how, you know, Napoleon Solo met Kerryokan. And so this is the perfect way that it came together.
He certainly gets more psychological in the movie than the TV show ever got.
Oh, very much so. Yeah. But I think the actors he worked with in that were done very well. Yeah, I think Henry Cavill worked really well as Napoleon Solo. And I loved also the actor they had playing, you know, Kerryokan.
Armie Hammer.
Yeah, he was, he was great, you know, and I was really worried about it because the only thing I had ever seen him in before that was the really awful Lone Ranger movie.
Right.
And yeah. I think, you know, he made it up for it. And I think these guys worked really well together.
Right on. And did you know that Henry Cavill was the second? It came down to Henry Cavill, Tom Hardy, and Charlie Hunnam as the three for King Arthur. Those were the final three choices.
Mm. Wow.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know if I could see Henry as King Arthur, though.
I could. I mean, I prefer Charlie Hunnam. But I can see Henry Cavill doing pretty much anything.
he's got enough on his plate at the moment.
Right.
Yeah, I think he's a little busy, you know, being super.
Yeah. Mm.
Although he had also just done, I mean, I think he was trying to get away from the spy stuff after Man from U.N.C.L.E. because, you know, he had done, what was it, Cold Hard Rain? I don't know, the one with Bruce Willis where... Anyway, so he's played a spy several times, or he's been caught up in spy activity several times. And I think that he was trying to kind of get out of that when he, you know, after Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I do understand that. So what did you like those movies, you know, that they were pre-existing, you know, franchises and he took them on? Did you think it was a good idea for him to go that way?
I loved them. I love Robert Downey Jr. as Sherlock Holmes. I think it was fun. I think it was inventive. I didn't go into it thinking that, you know, anyone was going to ruin the character. I've loved this character for a million years. I will love any iteration of this character. I don't think that you can really, I don't think any one person's perspective of a character is ever going to ruin that for me. I might prefer Benedict Cumberbatch. to Robert Downey Jr., but I think that the action versus the mental visions of the television show versus the film, I think you have, you know, a film, you've got 2 hours. You're 2 hours and you're done versus, you know, the way the Cumberbatch series has gone, you know, for, I don't know, 8 or 10 episodes, something like that, so.
No, very cool. I do understand that completely.
For myself, I found them fun. Well, I found the first one, Sherlock Holmes, fun. I don't think in any way it's definitive, but it's fun. It's certainly an odd action movie take on Sherlock Holmes. And Robert Downey Jr. is always charming. And they have a great supporting cast. And I did think Game of Shadows was a bit of a mess, quite frankly. Things keep blowing up for reasons that you're not exactly sure why. And it's like someone took a bicycle pump to the first movie and said, let's make it bigger.
It almost felt like he had, after the first one, he kind of went, you know, there's not enough twist. And he kind of went back to the Lock, Stock, Snatch, Revolver, Rock and Roller, where he tried to add like 6 extra elements and then incorporate them in. It felt like there were just, maybe one too many pieces of pie. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I mean, I like you. I like Sherlock Holmes, and I don't think that it's a bad version of Sherlock Holmes. I really didn't have any expectations for Man from U.N.C.L.E. because I was never a fan of the original TV show. I'm not saying I didn't like it. I'm just saying I just wasn't a fan. And I found it a nice little zippy 1960s period action piece. What it reminded me more than anything else, frankly, was X-Men First Class.
I could see that.
Also Matthew Vaughn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, actually, I could see the similarities to that, too, because they both take place in the same era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It also felt a little bit like Down with Love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very much so. Well, I think his next film, King Arthur, Lacey, I think you're the only one here that actually saw it.
Really? Oh my God. I loved it. I loved King Arthur. I'm really upset that I waited so long to see it. I set it up so where I was going to watch his whole catalog in order. So I started on Friday and I started with Lock, Stock and went all the way through with the exception of Revolver again, because I just had to wait until the end. But I saw King Arthur at the little $2 movie theater way up in Marietta. And I thought it was fantastic. It's in my top three. I think King Arthur might actually be my number two for Guy Ritchie. Rock and Roll is going to be my first, but I really think that King Arthur is maybe matches with Lock, Stock for me. So it had so many of the things that I want from a King Arthur film. And I read somewhere that it was the first in a series of six like proposed films, and I'm so excited. I don't know how well it did in the theaters, but I really am looking forward to seeing what they do to complete this, you know, the series. So
Lacey, just out of curiosity, what are some of your favorite, your other favorite King Arthur films?
Oh, Excalibur and, Believe It or Not, I love, the Richard Gere, First Night.
Yeah.
First Night with, Connery, and it's not exactly King Arthur and Camelot, but I loved Knight Riders, the old Ed.
Yes, I remember. Yeah, I remember, right? That well. I remember seeing that with a friend of mine who was in the SCA and who rode motorcycles, and we enjoyed it, but he said, "I'm sorry, those guys would all be dead from jousting on motorcycles."
Right on. But I mean, I've read a million King Arthur books. I actually, when I was 14, the first time I went to London, we went to that tiny little museum that has the, you know, the quote unquote supposed round table. That's kind of, I've always been a fan of the Arthurian legend, and I'm, you know, so. Well,
I was going to leave this for the end, but just so we're on the subject, have you ever seen the movie The Last Legion?
I don't think so.
Have you heard of the movie The Last Legion? It did very badly here, so.
I don't know. I'll have to look it up.
It's a weird little film that I wanted to mention to people if they want to see another type of King Arthur film. It was made about 10 years ago now. I think part of the problem it had was you have to buy Mr. Darcy as an action hero. Because it
which
stars
isn't hard after, well, after Kingsman.
After Kingsman. This was before Kingsman, though. This stars Colin Firth as mm-hmm. one of the last Roman legionnaires, Ben Kingsley as a wizard of sorts, and the gorgeous Arishwara Rai, who at that point mm-hmm. they were trying to somehow get into Hollywood movies. Mm-hmm. It's this complicated plot sort of family. It's really in some ways is a family movie because the bloodshed is not uber gory. It involves the last Roman emperor, a sword of destiny, and everyone running to Britannia. It's got Kevin McKidd in it. It's got Alexander Siddig and John Hannah, who a lot of people most recently would have seen on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's a zippy little retelling of the beginning of the Arthurian legend, and I frankly don't think it got its due. And I just would like to use the opportunity to let people know about it.
I have officially put it on my list of things to watch.
I am honored.
Very cool.
Well, there you go. Well, awesome. What do you see? You know, if nobody had ever seen a Guy Ritchie movie before, what would you guys recommend to somebody?
Rock and Roller. Hands down, Rock and Roller.
Really?
I would probably start with the beginning with Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. You mentioned music before. Yeah, it can be kind of loud, but I think his musical cues that he uses in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels are some of the best in movies. Mm-hmm. Better as, or at least as good as what Scorsese does.
Wow.
When the two groups walk by their crappy London apartment, Soap and Bacon and all those people, you hear this sort of Oasis guitar thing. And then when Dog and his crew of ruffians come by, you hear much louder death metal type things. Like, oh, that's just perfect. So yeah, I would say the seeds to a lot of all of Richie's other things are right there in Lockstock. Not that I don't like rock and roller.
Well, I'm just, you know, I was listening to the commentary of Rock and Rolla. Yes, that's how ridiculous I am. I actually listened to the commentaries of everything before I actually sat down to watch Revolver. Like, that's how resistant I was to Revolver.
But, I was listening to the commentary for Snatch, so don't feel.
Oh, bad. Right on. Okay. So, but the very end of the commentary for Rock and Rolla, it actually, you know, well, the screen freezes on the final scene and says, Archie, Johnny, and the Wild Bunch will return in The Real Rock and Rolla. And
that's right.
Mark Strong and Guy Ritchie did the commentary, and apparently they did the commentary during filming of the first Sherlock film. So that's 2009. Mm. And they talked about how it's already done. It's been written. It's ready to go. Mark Strong was talking about how excited he was about all the, you know, the dialogue and everything else. And so he was like, you know, we'll see. And I'm still waiting, because next year's the 10-year anniversary of Rock and Rolla. So if we can see the Wild Bunch boys, you know, 10 years later, I think that'd be awesome.
Hopefully Idris can clear a spot in his calendar.
And Tom Hardy, for that matter.
And Tom Hardy. Yeah, yeah, I mean, busy.
It's crazy.
That's very true. All right, kids. So we want to hear from you guys at home. You know, there's so much more to talk about with Guy Ritchie, but we want to hear from you first. Please write us esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. We'll be back probably talking about future projects of his and, you know, looking forward to what's coming up. I know rumor coming up with Sherlock Holmes 3. And like we had mentioned earlier, Aladdin is in pre-production. So that's going to be a really interesting thing. I don't know who they're going to get to play Genie. I just hope it's not going to be Robert Downey Jr.
Will Smith.
No.
Will Smith is attached.
No.
Really?
Oh.
He's actually attached. Wow.
Yep.
Okay. Well, he can sing, so there's that.
Okay, let's get out of here before I just throw up in my hat.
And we know we've seen him wearing those Genie pants, the big old baggy, the big fun, like, hammer pants.
Oh, I just threw up in my mouth, so... Let's talk to Angela and have a Geek
Girls. Call the doctor. Call the medic.
Let's have a Geek Girls take, and we'll be back.
Welcome to a Geek Girls take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this Geek Girl is talking about some of the summer movies that I have actually got to see this summer. Now, I've been to the movies a lot more this summer than I normally get to go. So, that is always a good thing. So far this summer, I've been able to see Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Alien Covenant, Wonder Woman, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Men Tell No Tales, and Transformers The Last Knight. Many of these I did their own episode for, so check back the last few weeks of episodes if you missed one. For the most part, all of these movies were enjoyable in either being really, really awesome, or okay to sit in the theater and stare at the screen and make fun of the movie at times. Alien Covenant was one that I was really looking forward to seeing. Now, I will say I enjoyed this film, just for the fact that there were lots of really, really fun xenomorph scare moments. Also, that alien shower scene, oh man, was I laughing in the theater during that. Probably pretty inappropriate of me, though. The story was predictable and definitely not the best Alien film, but I did enjoy it for what it was. I still walked out of that theater being happy. Transformers The Last Knight was definitely a Michael Bay film in every way of being a Michael Bay film could be. It had lots of explosions and Transformer fights. The story was all over the place, and I really feel like Anthony Hopkins took this job because he got to ride in cool sports cars and, come on, robots, so why not? Again, if you aren't looking for a cinematic masterpiece to go see and just want a really fun film with robots and just want to turn your brain off for a little while, then this is your film. And truthfully, I do not mean that in a bad thing, in a bad way at all. It's a good popcorn film to go see. There are still a few really good films coming out that I'm super excited about seeing. So hopefully I will continue to talk about all the fun films that are out this summer in the coming episodes for the upcoming weeks. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out. Love is kind of crazy.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Con Report. With Mike Gordon out on vacation, it's left up to me to talk all about upcoming cons where you can find all ESO personnel. It looks like with the dog's days this summer, not that many cons that ESO people are going to be at. We have only two before the end of the summer. We have coming up Ev Con Gratis and the Deep South Con in High Point, North Carolina. You could find Angela the Geek Girl herself there. Maybe she'll play some ukulele for you. Then on August 11th through the 13th, we have Otakon, which is in Washington, D.C., and Angela the Geek Girl is going to be there. So say hi to Angela Pritchett. She sure would love hearing from you. Then the big one. That's right, folks. Under 60 days left. August 31st through September 4th, it's Dragon Con, where you can find all kinds of ESO network shows there. You'll find ESO, ESW, Geek Girls Take, Dr. Geek's Lab, Transmissions from Atlantis, The Cigar Nerds, The Flopcast, Podcasterole, and much, much more. So you should be able to find one or two, at least, you know, people who are involved on ESO shows involved in one panel or two. So definitely try to find us. Of course, we want to hear about all kinds of different cons that you're going to be attending. Or if you have a con that you want us to promote up on the show, please write us esopodcast@gmail.com. We definitely would love to help promote. We moderate, or we just, you know, like going to cons and talking about them. So definitely contact us. Or as Mike likes to say, we love talking about conventions. So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. Wow, I can't believe this one's already flown by. It's just going so fast. You know, I guess not having Howdy Mike here is just, you know, not the same. He's up, you know, I got a picture of his new igloo that he's building. He just sent it to me during the show and has a big Howdy on the top. So it's perfect. So we are going to wrap up this week. I want to thank everyone for joining us and thank our guests. Of course, let's thank Heather Allen earlier joining us, talking about her project that she has going on. And we will, like we said earlier, we have the information in the show notes to if you want to apply for being in the reality show, if you're in a relationship with, you know, somebody online and you're dating basically online but never met in person, they want to hear from you. So that should be kind of interesting. And of course, Matthew Quinn, who was our victim this week in the Geek Seat, thank you so much. And last but not least, Nick, you made it through another episode, my friend.
Thank you, sir. I just want to let people know that I'm the organizer for Sci-Fi, one of the organizers for Sci-Fi Commons here in Seattle. We show movies once a month at Scarecrow Video on Roosevelt and once a month at Wayward Coffee House on 65th at Roosevelt.
Nick, what city?
Seattle, sorry. Yeah. City of Seattle. You want me to start that all over again?
No, it's good.
Okay. This month, for our book Into Movies at Scarecrow, we're going to be doing Invasion of the Body Snatchers based on the Finney novella. And we're going to have a special double feature at Wayward with two Roger Corman films, including Attack of the Crab Monsters. Also, the Seattle International Film Festival wrapped here in Seattle about 3 weeks ago. And speaking of Guy Ritchie movies, there was an animated Chinese film which translates in English as Have a Nice Day, an animated film about gangsters in a realistic fashion in which a low-level gangster rips off the take from a construction shakedown to finance the reconstructive surgery on his girlfriend's botched plastic surgery. Everyone starts chasing the bag of money and mayhem ensues. It's a very Richie-esque film.
Sounds pretty darn awesome, actually.
Cool.
Very awesome. And, you know, I remember from when I was living out there, Scarecrow Video, I'm actually amazed it's still around.
It is now a nonprofit. It has been named a cultural landmark by the United States Congress. I may be exaggerating that last part. But it is certainly greatly appreciated by the city of Seattle. And it, as a nonprofit, the wolves have retreated somewhat from their doors.
Oh, that is awesome. Because there was rumor for years that, you know, with the lack of, you know, with the bringing on of, you know, online videos and all that type of stuff, that Scarecrow was going to become a thing of the past. I'm so glad to hear it's thriving.
It's in a partnership with the Grand Illusion Theater, which, believe it or not, is still there.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is awesome. That is pretty damn amazing. It's definitely, if you ever go up to Seattle, folks, check out Scarecrow. It is a place you can find some of the most obscure, most movies that you couldn't even, you know, dream of finding at a regular store. Stuff you probably can't even find on Amazon in some ways.
For your dedicated listeners, they have an entire room dedicated to psychotronic films.
Oh, that's perfect for us.
Yes.
That is awesome. And of course, Lacey, you did it. You survived. Was it the best 25 cents you ever spent?
It was. It was indeed. I hope you guys donate another set of podcasts to the charity this year. We'll get somebody else a fun. I mean, this was really fun. I was really nervous at first, and now I'm just, I don't know, happy to be here.
And now you're part of the family, and you're still tied to the geek seat, so you're not leaving, dear.
Oh, right on. I have had a really good time from the very beginning with the first one I did was the presidential movies.
Yes.
And then, sequels that should never have been made. Mm-hmm. So right on.
Yeah. So you've done a great job and we've gotten a lot of great feedback about you. And, you know, I see great things in your podcasting future.
Yay.
And we could all say we knew her when. That's all we could say.
Oh, right on.
So it's pretty darn cool. So do you have a shout out?
I do. Speaking of the Dragon Con charity, this year, I'm so excited. The original donation matching for Dragon Con was $50,000. So basically up until this past year, if the charity auction made over $50,000, the Dragon Con powers that be would match up to $50,000. And this year they have actually increased that to $100,000. So, if anybody has anything that they would like to donate to the charity, you can send an email to charityevents@dragoncon.org. Hold on. I'm going to check that. Yes. charityevents@dragoncon.org. They've got all kinds of stuff planned. I'm so excited about this year. It's going to be great.
That is awesome. Very cool, my friend. And you know what? You are. You really want to know? Now you blew my train of thought. Damn it.
Sorry.
That's okay. No, you've been a great addition to the show and definitely looking forward to what you're going to bring to the rest of us. Thank you so much for everything. And folks, that charity that she mentioned, it's definitely worth checking out. Dragon Con does a lot of great work and, you know, they do with each year a different charity and definitely please look and see what they can do and what you could do for them.
This year it's the Special Olympics of Georgia.
How can you not like that? You know, so I definitely think that's great. My shout out real quick goes out to Peter Capaldi. Yesterday, as of this recording, he did his last regular season episode of Doctor Who. He still has the Christmas special to go to, but he, for the last 3 years, he has brought us the Doctor and he has been amazing. I just felt like this last, you know, season, if brought closed a story arc started off with Grumpy Doctor, and he actually became, you know, all the way through, you know, for the first season, he was trying to see if he was a good man or a, you know, a bad man or whatever. And through his 3 years, he found that out, and he ended, you know, his run pretty much sacrificing himself for a bunch of people against the Cybermen. I know, spoilers if you haven't watched the episode yet, but, you know, it's a really big thing. And Peter, I think, took a maturity. I think he took the Doctor to new places, and I am going to miss him. I just wanted to, you know, thank him for everything. He hasn't regenerated yet. He has not, and they haven't even announced who the 13th Doctor is going to be. But, you know, you can find all that stuff on our sister show, Earth Station Who, and, you know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, and, you know, check it out. We talk all about this final episode, and we have to now wait till Christmas to find out his final outcome. So with that being said, we want to hear from you guys. ESOpodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And we are going back next week to the movies. We talked about a director, so it's almost fitting that we're going to the movies next week again. We are going to be looking at Spider-Man Homecoming, which somebody in this room has already seen. Mm-hmm. Well, we're not going to say anything because we don't want to spoil it yet. Mm-hmm. So it should be a lot of fun, and, you know, looking forward to seeing how Spider-Man goes. And I'm got a lot of hope for that one. So until then, my name is Mike Faber. It's been my pleasure to talk to you, and we'll see you next time here on the Earth Station One podcast. Peace. And we're done.
You've been listening to Earth Station One, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. The show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESO Amazon.com e-store, where right from our website you can find all kind of geeky goodness. And if you get something up there, you also help support the station. ESO also has a Zazzle store to buy cool ESO merchandise and such. Show your ESO love with something from Zazzle. To learn more about ESO, our website is esopodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station One podcast. Peace.
That's it. The show's over. It's time to head home. See you next week here at Earth Station One.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.